Rufus, have you been enjoying the one and dones that which are on our sponsor Splash Sports' platform?
You know, I have. I would have enjoyed it a little bit more had the golfer I chose not managed to hit the ball in the water the final two holes of a tournament where he had the lead.
Yeah, I enjoy having like a golfer to cheer for. This idea of one and done is one of the competitions or contests available on Splash Sports. They also have things for NFL. They have, you know, Survivor, Pick'em, all those types of things. We're going to be doing a one and done, a bet the process one and done, starting with the Waste Management Open. And so in 2 weeks, so look out for that. And in today's episode, we're also going to have Adam Levitan, who's the founder of Establish the Run and does some great work around projections and DFS. So with that, let's start the process.
Bet the process. Bet the process. Welcome to the podcast. Bet the process. It's not the typical cookie cutter nonsense. If you came just for picks, you're in the wrong place. Find a tout with the narrative to make a strong case. Instead of blindly assuming a team must be tanking, we're looking for the edge of Massey Peabody rankings. Crunching all the numbers in a simulated system that break down the data, analytically driven. Media coverage of sports gambling is pathetic.
Welcome to another episode of the Bet the Process podcast.
It's Jeff's birthday episode.
It's my birthday episode.
It's Jeff's birthday.
Not a day over 30. No, I turned 51. It's crazy. It's crazy to be 51.
It's
crazy,
Jeff,
to have.
It's your reverse quinceañera.
What?
This is your reverse quinceañera birthday.
I moderately understand that reference, but not really.
Quinceañera is 15 and you're 51.
Got it.
Yeah.
That makes sense. Thoughts on the NFL, Rufus? Thoughts? We're going to have Adam Levitan on in a little bit, talk a little bit more, but did you have any gut reactions from last week?
Man, it must be tough being a Bills fan. Like, I'm imagining like a Bills fan in his or her like 60s or something with those Super Bowls in the 90s, like all the close calls, and it just seems like they just can't win the big games.
Can we talk about the end of that game and how... I mean, obviously, I think most people that are sane don't believe that Tyler Bass lost that game for them, because ultimately kicking a field goal there is probably akin to giving up and saying you're going to lose to Mahomes. Like,
right, because Mahomes, like, to go. Like, I mean, the chances of Mahomes bringing the Chiefs down and kicking a game-winning field goal feel like they're pretty high in that situation.
Very high. You know, the thing that was so interesting, I think, around that Josh Allen drive is his desire to keep pushing the ball down the field, when the reality is you probably don't want to push the ball down the field, right? That
you want that to be the last drive of the game.
Last drive of the game with the touchdown, right? And that whole concept, right? Because you watch the Niners game, I assume too, right? Like McCaffrey scoring that touchdown with a little under 2 minutes left. They obviously, if he had gone down at the half yard line, they would have had a brand new set of downs at the half yard line.
Yeah,
I know what you're going to say, but the Green Bay had three timeouts, right? So,
well, what I think Green Bay did on defense there, it looked like they're guarding the line of scrimmage. Cause if you remember, it was not an and goal situation. Was it second and short or third and short?
No, it was third and short.
Third and short. I think they were saying, okay, we're going all out to stop the guideline of scrimmage. If we don't, he scored, let him score.
Right.
I think that was intentional there. It looked, if you looked at the replay, it looked like they were like, okay, let's let him go. It wasn't like they were just trying to let him score the entire play, but like, I think if you get that stop, that's great. But obviously the worst case scenario there is first and goal at the like 2 yard line.
Well, so then in your mind, should McCaffrey have gone down at the half yard line there?
That's so tough though, because then I think it increases San Francisco's chances of winning. However, if it doesn't work, it looks so bad, right? If then they get stuffed three times.
Well, but if you, the thing is, I think with three timeouts,
yes, the answer
the
is
other
yes.
Team has
Wait, Green Bay had three timeouts there?
Green Bay still had three timeouts. So, I mean, I think even if you, the perfect scenario for the Niners is they score on fourth down.
Well, clearly.
You probably only still burn 15, 20 more seconds at the most.
I thought they'd already taken a timeout.
We could go back and look,
sure,
but I'm pretty sure that, because I remember at the time thinking to myself, oh, should he have gone down there
But after that interception, with 140 to go, they were able to kneel it out. So I believe it was they had two.
Right.
So
I think Green Bay took one timeout during that drive, and then they had two timeouts left.
Okay.
When they got the ball back at the, you know, when the Niners got the ball back with what, 34 seconds left or something like that.
Three timeouts. Yeah. I mean, cause that's tough, right? Like, cause it's like, you don't,
I don't think you can as McCaffrey go down there, because any false start or offensive pre-snap penalty just completely makes that a really bad decision. And ultimately, you know, it's so hard to time field goals. You can't time touchdowns.
No.
And it's too hard. So I think that's easy. Now you saw that this whole going for two down 14 reared its ugly head again. What but made Mike, it even Michael worse? Wilbon. What's that?
Michael Wilbon's comments.
Well, I know. I'm probably going to try to talk to Tony about it on Friday or on Thursday if he'll let me talk about it. But what I think is interesting is Chris Collinsworth actually tried to explain it this time. And, you know, our friend Doug Kazarian made a post about how it was great that he tried to explain it. But he explained it wrong. Like, from a standpoint, he didn't, or at least incompletely. He explained it in terms of expected value, meaning field goals are less than 100% and two-point conversions are roughly 55% right now. And so therefore, like, there's some level of like expected value. He didn't use the term expected value.
Right, but that's the reality not the reason is, to do it there, though.
I know it has to do completely with the game state and the opportunity to win a game in regulation versus tie a game in regulation. The thing that people fail to understand is that simply tying a game gives you at best, you know, unless you are the much, much better team, really at best a 50% chance to win that game if you go into overtime. What's that?
You can't say at best a 50% chance
for
any team.
Fine.
You're talking about this specific team.
No, I'm just saying generally speaking, right? Even if a team is much, much better than the other team, it's going to be anchored on 50% as your outcome, right? You know, if you were 14 point favorites, like going
it's
into
higher than 50% if you're 14
it's,
point
it's higher, but it's not 14 points anymore.
No,
right? Obviously, and it's not whatever corresponding money line to 14% it is. It's much smaller.
Right. But I think, I mean, we've talked about this ad nauseum over the years. Like, I remember when I made a little chart about this back in 2018. But I think what it really is it's logic. It's not math. I mean, there's very basic math, but it's logic. And I think the people that don't bother to think through the logic are the ones that don't understand it.
Do you think it's the people don't bother to, or they literally can't understand the logic? I think they can't understand the logic.
I think most of them are not presented. Maybe they're not presented with it. I don't know. It's
Our
hard to
Mina
explain
Kimes
something
did
like that.
A nice explanation, I guess, on Twitter. I haven't had the chance to listen to it yet, but I've seen a bunch of people post that it's good. So
I think the best, to me, the way that the logic is best expressed for me is visually, a sort of like decision tree type thing. This could happen. This could happen. Like it's
for
kind
you,
of obvious
though.
That way. Right. But I mean, some people, I think it's harder on telecasts to explain it. I mean, I think it's easier if you see it. And I wouldn't say I'm necessarily even a visual learner, but you can't really show it. I mean, maybe they had an infographic that sort of showed that on TV. That would be pretty cool.
All right. Well, let's bring in Adam Levitan now, and then we'll talk to you all again on the other side. We now welcome in Adam Levitan to the Bet the Process podcast. Adam, thanks for joining us.
Honor to be here, guys. Thank you.
An honor. That's I don't know if I would ever use that word. So can we talk a little bit about the reason that we had you on is maybe I was a little late to the game, but it was your tweets that sort of alerted me to, I had heard that there was stuff going on with ESPN bets. And then obviously your tweets talked about it. And then I read the Purdom article. I was thinking, oh, maybe we should have Purdom on, but then it's like, even seems weird to have Purdom on because he works for ESPN. And so why don't you quickly give a high level background on what happened with ESPN bets this week. And then we can kind of dive into why it matters or whether it's important or motivations and whatnot.
Yeah. I was just kind of minding my own business on Saturday and somebody sent me a message and said, you can get on ESPN bet for size Ravens -9.5 +110. And I was like, what do you mean? Like, they're just posting an off-market line. And he's, no, it's a boost. And people are saying it's because they're trying to lay off action or balance out action. They got a ton on the Texans. I didn't think too much of it, but then I started to think, this is crazy. I mean, it was like 3 hours before an NFL playoff game to offer something so far off market and something so obviously plus EV to anyone who's like remotely paying attention. If you assume that the market is right, then obviously Ravens minus 9.5 plus 110 is just printing money. So it gave people a big...
What was the widely available line at that point?
9.5 minus 110, I believe, right, Rufus?
Yeah, and I eventually went up to minus 10. I don't know if that boost was in place until the game kicked, but we say it's like this huge printing money opportunity, but it's like you're basically being the book.
Right. You're winning like 5% or something, right?
Yeah.
Right, and they also offered plus 140 on Ravens minus 10.5, which actually may have been better. I didn't think too much of it, but then when people started saying that they were betting 5-6 figures on this, going for 6-figure arbs and 5-figure arbs on this, and the exchanges were going nuts, I thought it was just like such a wild story, and I couldn't really figure out exactly why ESPN was doing it. And out of all the replies to my tweet, nobody still seems to have a really good idea of exactly why ESPN bet did it. And then the next day, they did it again. Chiefs was plus 135 money line, pretty much painted. And then they boosted to plus 150 for size also on the Chiefs money line. So I don't know. I thought it was fascinating. I have no idea why they did it, but I have some guesses, but I have no idea why.
I mean, they weren't promoting this, were you? I mean, the second theory was like that you espoused in your tweet was that this is for publicity and promotion, which is why most of these odds boosts occur. But it was like a secret.
And most of the odds boosts are capped at, you know, $100 or some small prop. It's never a side, and it's never a side on a playoff game. So yeah, they did not promote it. I didn't see anyone, any ESPN people talking about it. I didn't see ESPN on TV talking about it. I didn't see anyone on ESPN tweet about it. So the only people who knew about it were like sharps who were getting messages and everybody was talking about it. And is that the people you're trying to attract to your book? That strikes me as definitely not. You know, there's what percent of sports bettors are actually price sensitive? You know, very few, I would guess. So yeah, it was just really weird.
Well, if that's the case, maybe this is their way of identifying them and being like, oh, you took advantage of this boost, now we're cutting you down to $3.
Yeah. It seems like there's a less expensive way to do that, but yeah.
I like your mattress Mac theory, though. Because if
he said it wasn't him, but I guess he would probably not own up to saying it was him. He would. He loves the publicity. Yeah. So,
but I mean, like, if Mattress Mac took plus 9.5 minus 110, then why wouldn't, you know, essentially they're breaking even on it. They're not breaking even because they're having to pay the federal excise tax and all that stuff. But
maybe they, well, you know, the interesting thing was, and I know this because of I do the Tony Kornheiser show, and I listened to the show because they have other people picking games. They have like Chuck Todd, they have a monkey, they have James Carville. And so earlier in the week, they had Chuck Todd on, and they were saying that both of the big lines had gone under 9. And so he was talking about like, they even actually, I think said the Ravens was like minus 7.5. And I went on Friday morning and I'm like, I don't know where the hell you guys are getting your lines, but I'm looking at this and these never went under 9 or 9.5. And in Purdom's story, he says that there was a point where ESPN bet popped to 7.5. So, I mean, Occam's razor would say that they have no idea what they're doing. And they were maybe trying to like take a position and didn't know how to do it. Or they were slightly imbalanced and they were trying to take more action. But, you know, this isn't ESPN, right?
No.
Just so everyone's clear.
This is Penn.
Right? Yes. And it's been branded ESPN.
I mean, obviously it's the same Penn, it's the same company that works with Barstool, but it's probably the same, I would assume, the same risk team, et cetera, there, right?
Yeah. I would guess, yes.
Yeah, they didn't. From what I know of the ESPN deal, and so inside baseball early on in that, I talked to some of the leadership at ESPN about whether there was any opportunity, like whether they were interested in having me help them figure this out. And clearly the answer to that was no. But anyways, beyond that, I didn't get a sense that they had a great vision for what they were trying to accomplish. So my guess is that there isn't new leadership taking a real, you know, point of view on the change that the bookmaking practices at Penn should take now that they're ESPN versus Barstool.
So if you took $3 million or something from Mattress Mack on the Texans, there's way easier ways to get action on Baltimore than going all the way to -9.5 +110. You could go to 9.5
even
flat.
Money.
Yeah, 9.5 flat would have gotten you a ton of money, right? So why go all the way, and why offer the 10.5 +140 also?
Well, I mean, the Mattress Mack thing too could have been they took this big bet from him and they took it at very advantageous odds to them. Like maybe they took it at +7.5 or something, and that's what they said they would need to do. And maybe then they're like, oh, then we can take some -7.5 and we're arbing that, right? And they're not necessarily thinking, what are their other choices? They're actually thinking like, how do we make this trade good itself? And again, Occam's razor would be that that may be what happened, because it does seem weird that they went to 7.5 at any point when widely available was 9.5. I guess Ravens was probably at 9 at that point, because it went down to 9 at one point early on in the week.
It seems like there was some sort of snafu though, and it was probably a mistake of some sort. The question is, what was the intention?
They left it up. I mean, not only after everybody was already talking about, after people were already getting five figures, six figures, whatever, they left it up. It was still up for a while after everybody was talking about it. So if it was a mistake, I assume they would have taken it down or gone back to flat 9.5 or something.
Yeah.
The other thing I would say, like, they definitely got a ton of deposits. I mean, a ton of people I know deposited. I don't know how long they're going to stick on ESPN. I don't know how long ESPN is going to let them stick, but they generated a lot of deposits from sharp people, but they generate a lot of deposits with this. And maybe that's good for shareholders or something. And they, you know, they just took a bath, $500 million on the Barstool deal. Maybe getting deposits was a goal. It seems
unlikely.
Yeah,
but like if you were going to do this for marketing and for deposits, you would do way more marketing around this than what they did, right?
Yes.
It shouldn't be that I'm, no offense, Adam, searching Adam Levitan's, you know, Twitter to find out this information. Like this should be something that they're talking about. And they, like, your ESPN, like, talk about it on your television show. Talk about, like, you control the media narrative, right? And it's like, it's incredible to me that it can't have been for marketing.
Yeah,
that's the reality. Because if it is, like, I don't think ESPN people are idiots about marketing, and they certainly know how to market. They may not know how to run a sports book, but they certainly know how to market.
Yeah, I'd agree.
So it's got to be. So then it's the only answer then is it's got to be a mistake. Or an overreaction to something, right?
Or which, not knowing how to balance your action, right? I've obviously never run a book, but I'm sure there are people in risk management in the book that should know how to do this in a much better way than how they executed it.
Yeah. We're going to have David O on in a couple of weeks, so maybe we'll ask David O again. He'll probably have a better understanding. You have three unintelligent people having a conversation about something we don't know. So hopefully this is riveting content to everyone. Anyways, we'll fast forward. Let's talk a little bit about this week's games, or actually we can talk a little bit about last week's games and go into this week's games.
Well, first I want to ask how it went for you both from a DFS perspective and from a prop betting perspective.
Was not great in props, did really well in the weekly leader markets and the game leader markets, which there's so many. I know, you know, Rufus, but for these island games, there's so many markets now, you know, who will have the longest rush in the game? Who will have the longest reception in the game? Who will lead the game, or who will lead the entire week in passing yards? And so the more markets there are, I think the better for the consumer. And that's kind of the argument that we have for, you know, these rec books or square books. They're willing to offer all these markets to consumers, obviously not at huge limits, but yeah. And then, DFS was fine. I think if you played CMC and Mike Evans, which were very clear plays, and then probably Amon-Ra, you probably did reasonably well. So yeah, it was. I like these four game slates.
What were Rufus, you and Adam both like? What's like the biggest prior that changed, given what you saw last week? Was there anything that was a prior that changed, or, you know, obviously we are trained as intelligent analytics people to not let our priors be changed by one event, but let's suspend that and pretend you're not a robot. What would be the thing that you would have changed?
I find the whole conversation around Brock Purdy fascinating between the analytics people and the tape people and everything, because based on EPA and a ton of other stats, Brock Purdy is like incredible and incredibly efficient and incredibly good. However, you get a lot of the tape bros out there and they'll say, listen, you could put Sam Darnold in there. You could put anyone back there and they'd be having the same level of success. For the first time in the Packers game, maybe all year, outside of probably the Ravens game, Brock Purdy made some throws. I was like, man, maybe this guy really is a seventh round pick. You know, it was scary there on Brock Purdy. It was in the rain. He didn't have Debo, which I think hurt. But yeah, my priors on Purdy were that people were not giving him enough respect. And I would say coming out of this game against the Packers, I'm probably more scared now on Purdy's actual ability heading into this Lions game than I was before. But the whole Purdy thing, I'm curious what you guys think, because there is a huge dichotomy between analytics and tape stuff on Purdy, I think.
Yeah, I mean, the question is, was it his ability that shone through or was it the moment? I mean, like we saw with Dak in the wild card game, how it just seemed like the moment was like too big for him there. There's too much pressure. He was not himself. Was that Purdy being his true self or Purdy being, you know, feeling the pressure?
Yeah.
I mean, I think the other thing, and this is why narratives are narratives, right? What I would flip to you is to say, hey, the Niners needed a game where they came back because they may be facing a situation like that. And this is a game where they, you know, everyone saw the 30-0 or whatever, 50-0, whatever it was for Kyle. And I would say that Purdy showed on that last drive. Well, he made a couple really good throws and generally looked poised, as they would say. And the narrative would have been, you know, going into this, oh, do we know whether Purdy can come back? And now at least we have one data point that he can. That would be, again, like that's why narratives are what they are, because you can sort of take them out. I mean, it was interesting because even from a film perspective, like I think having watched Purdy quite a bit, he is accurate. I know he's been accurate and he definitely seemed inaccurate on Saturday night. So Rufus, do you have any prior that you would change based on last week?
Well, first I was going to say, I think it's just so hard to quantify the impact of a quarterback relative to the scheme, relative to the personnel around him. And so, I mean, I don't think there's an argument that the San Francisco 49ers offense is very, very good.
Yeah.
And that Brock Purdy's their starting quarterback. So at least in terms of like handicapping props and stuff like that, I don't need to know how much is Purdy versus how much is, well, maybe I do with Debo if Debo is going to be out.
Right. I think the Debo thing is huge, and maybe that affected Purdy a lot because so much of it is they have the four best players in the league or four of the best players in the league in yards after catch, and you remove one of those, maybe their best one. I mean, Debo had two targets on the first three throws from Purdy. He was going to be a huge part of the game plan, and they were running, you know, Juwan Jennings runs like a 4.7 or a 4.8, and they were giving him an end around because they had the Debo plays in. So, yeah, it wasn't great without Debo, I think, made a big difference.
So, you asked about what changed my priors. I mean, this isn't something changing my priors, but this is something I was investigating and kind of going into last week. And I still pulled the trigger on a bet under Josh Allen rush yards. But the notion that these quarterbacks that can scramble and run are going to run more in big games because they are not worried about minimizing injury risk like they are during a regular season game. They're not going to put their body on the line quite as much. It's, in essence, load management there. Like, whereas, you know, when the season is on the line, they're going to go for that extra yard and they're going to basically make the play that's best for the team in the short term. And so I kind of looked at Josh Allen's scramble rate in playoff games versus non-playoff games, Mahomes, same thing. And same with Lamar. And, you know, I think there is something to that. It's hard to figure out how much of it is noise versus how much is signal exactly. And because you have the design runs and then you have the scrambles, right?
Yeah.
And then so, but if you think about that, also a higher scramble rate would mean probably a higher sack rate too, potentially, because sacks can be scrambles that just don't work out, right? So from a prop perspective, that's something I'm going to be really looking at, especially related to Mahomes and related to the
Lamar. So Rufus, I understand what you're getting at, but I think it's unclear what your main point is in terms of the takeaway. There is a narrative that these like high value quarterbacks who can run, but probably preserve themselves a little bit during the regular season, run more often and therefore probably run for more yards.
And you know what?
In playoff games, is that true or not?
I believe it is true. I don't know if it's as true as the market number believes. Like,
so
I,
the market
I basically
is
went off of
with that number.
Yes, and so I've like it's always it seems like you know betting Josh Allen no rushing touchdown, Josh Allen under rush yards, like in playoff games, and same with like Mahomes in the Super Bowls. You know, those are. It seems like you're getting great numbers relative to those players' norms. You really are, and because there, I mean,
isn't it?
It's a really public. But because there is this narrative, right? But I think the narrative is true to an extent. But at the same time, even if I went with like the impact of playoff Josh Allen, I still couldn't get myself up to, you know, a number high enough where I wouldn't bet that under. I think I got him. I had him at like 42 yards and I was able to get, and that's a mean, not a median. And you're able to get like under 45 and a half.
I mean, isn't this though one of those cases where you'll never know? Like the sample size is so small that, and these, you know, like I think last year in our props contest in the Super Bowl, I think I took a Mahomes rushing over prop and you basically were like, oh, that's, you know, that's bad value or whatever. And I guess like it's one of those cases where it's science, not art. And especially in this situation, go ahead, Rufus.
Well, I was going to say, you're right. You don't have that many, you don't have a large sample of Mahomes playoff games. I mean, yes, you do, but relatively speaking, you don't. And then also within those playoff games, you know, if Mahomes is up like 17 points in the fourth quarter, he's probably not going to be running to the same extent. And so when you looked at, for example, the Ravens line, you could make the argument that like, okay, Lamar, yes, I assume he's going to run more in the playoffs, but you know, that's assuming the game's close. And if they're up two touchdowns, he's probably not going to be in that sort of same mode as if they're down two touchdowns. But what I think you can do, Jeff, is kind of look at sort of groups of quarterbacks. I might not be able to have enough of a sample size on just Josh Allen, but I could look at Josh Allen. I could look at Mahomes. I can look at Lamar Jackson. You know, I could look at Michael Vick from back in the day. I could basically try to find quarterbacks that fit a certain mold of how often, what their normal scramble rates are, what their normal designed run rates are for like non-quarterback sneaks, and sort of see how that increases as a function of whether it's a playoff game or not. And generally, whether it's a close game, I could like sort of filter out like the blowout situations of the playoffs and be like, look, okay, in a high leverage situation, I expect, you know, in a playoff game, these guys are going to scramble more often and what percentage. And then sort of, you know, if I believe that Mahomes like differs significantly from this group of quarterbacks, then I can, then my prior in essence is this group of quarterbacks, not all quarterbacks.
All right, let's move on to this week's games. I know from Massey Peabody and some other things I've seen, general perception from an analytics perspective is that both of these lines are a little bit short, I would assume. Let's take the first game on Sunday. Ravens are what, 3.5 point favorites over Kansas City. Narrative would be Mahomes doesn't lose in the playoffs, take the underdog. This line popped 2.5, went up to 3.5 right away. I think Massey Peabody makes this like more like 7. Is that right? And
Massey Peabody hasn't updated yet, but
you know it's going to make this line like 7, right?
I'll let you know in a second.
Okay. Adam, any perspective on this from a standpoint of the, you know, kind of like things to look for? You know, you do a lot of the DFS stuff and you kind of understand projections a lot more, individual players. Feed that into this and tell us what's the right side here, Ravens or Chiefs?
Yeah, it's hard, I think, when you have arguably the best defense in the NFL and then also Patrick Mahomes. I mean, we've been trying to work on this adjusted yard per play stuff. I know Rufus talked about this, like strip out a lot of the noise out of yards per play. We had Baltimore, third best defense in yards per play, KC, fourth. I mean, I think that the Marlon Humphrey injury is definitely one to watch in the secondary for the Ravens. He's so good, but God, it's not like they can really press them on the perimeter anyways. Rashee Rice will play some in the slot and some outside. So in these lines, in these games, I feel like it's the lines are so efficient. We took Rashee Rice under 6.5 minus 130. In props, we make the median there around 6.0. There's not like huge edges, I don't think, in the props at all on these island games whatsoever, especially with how many eyes are on the props market. now. But yeah, I have a take on the other game from my gut, from my narrative-y gut. From this one, though, I think seems about right to me. And I just think people don't understand how good Chiefs defense is. Ravens defense gets all the headlines. Chiefs defense, when they're all healthy, is really maybe the league's best.
Will they be all healthy?
I think so.
But didn't a bunch of guys get knocked out in that game against Buffalo?
Yeah, we'll get a practice report tomorrow. We're recording this Tuesday around 5 p.m. Eastern, but yeah, we'll see.
Adam, are there any sorts of trends for any of these teams where, like, you know, do you expect Travis Kelce to play a bigger role in a bigger game? Things like that where it really differs from, you know, if you were just making a line for these teams playing in the middle of the season?
Yeah, we don't have weights on for that. I think when we go through in our manual checks, we can start to look at stuff like that a bit more. From my looking back at stuff, I think that stuff can get overblown by the market to some degree. But props market, again, is changing really fast. I'm sure when you get back into the Super Bowl, Rufus, you'll notice, like, whereas it was a printing press just betting unders, betting overs now is not, you know, you're going to be forced to if you're betting props at volume now at a really high rate. And so, yeah, props market is changing big time. There's way more sharp people in it. I can't put my finger on exactly why, because limits are still not great. But yeah, it does seem like it's changing a lot.
Well, the problem is I just hate betting overs. It's like been ingrained to me from a young age that, like, you know, overs, especially on players, individual players, where an injury and you lose.
Yeah.
Right. And like, think about betting like a Deebo Samuel over. Like, he gets hurt approximately 15% of games, right? In his career, something like that. Like, think about the edge. Yeah. So, how much do you think about that, though, for maybe like more of a role player? So, there weren't like props on like Ray McLeod or anything like that, were there? Oh.
I mean, if you go to the domestics, there's props on like every player now. Third tight end, fourth wide receiver. It's crazy. Yeah.
But the thing is, if you think about sort of these role players, their injuries are more likely to help them than hurt them to get more playing time. But at the same time, if there's somebody lined at, like, you know, 12 and a half receiving yards, you know, their median needs to be significantly higher to make it good. And I think in general, because the public doesn't necessarily understand the difference between mean and median, like, that guy could be projected at 1.5 catches for 16 yards or something like that. But you have to get that second catch probably to go over. Mm-hmm. And the median is going to be with the mean of 1.5, the median is going to be under 1.5. And so, like, that tends to bias it towards the under. So you sort of have these like sort of conflicting things pushing in conflicting directions.
Absolutely. I mean, like, MVS is a great example, right? Like, his catch line right now is 1.5 over -103. We make his mean 1.3 catches and the median 1.0. So we're showing like $12.90 of EV on the under at that price. However, if there are injuries around him, it certainly benefits him. And, you know, those are like the edges now in props, you know, like $12 of EV is something you can't ignore anymore in props on an under.
Well, and if you think about, like, if you play out the potential injury scenarios, and this is something I've done in more recent Super Bowls where I'm like, okay, let's assign an injury probability to this guy and say, assume that the injury could happen at any time during the game, and then have contingent projections for everybody else, how much it changes their projection if that happens. And then, like, you're going to get these more interesting distributions where, like, suddenly an alternate over might be not the world's worst bet. And I would think for DFS, this is even more important because what you really care about is the tails.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. 100%.
Okay. Let's talk a little bit about the game that you said you do have an opinion in. So tell us what that opinion is, Adam.
I mean, I don't really bet sides, but I thought that the Lions have been disrespected for so long. I thought, you know, so obviously it's easy to say now, but 6.5 surprised me in that game last week. And I think a big part of it is understanding how good Detroit is at stopping the run. And so it forces teams into these situations where they're just gonna have to throw so much. And also, God, I mean, their offense is difficult to stop. So all these teams that blitz, all these teams that leave open over the middle, you get ARSB and Laporta in there as two of the best players in the league over the middle. So I think the Lions are going to do well as a rush defense here and force Purdy, maybe without Debo, to throw on them. I don't know how much you guys think Debo is worth the line, but like in this spot, if you told me Debo was worth a half point or a full point, I wouldn't even call you crazy. So yeah, I think that line went from like 6.5 to 7. And yeah, that one doesn't surprise me at all. So yeah, I'm curious what you guys think on the on what that line should be.
I mean, before this past week, I would have made it minus 10. So I think probably a little less than that now.
But Rufus has been kind of low on Detroit all year, well, meaning I don't think like Detroit... he does not think they're a top team. He kind of thinks they're like a slightly above average.
No, they're team. Above average team, but they're not one of the elite teams. They just,
but that's also right. Your system has, to Adam's point, disrespected them all year.
And I'm not talking about like just the priors or anything like that. I'm talking about how they've actually performed this season.
So, yeah, I think if you go back to your narrative, Adam, of those guys working in the middle of the field, isn't that a little bit where the Niners are strong with Greenlaw and Warner, where they're able to force a lot of throws outside the hashes, right? And ultimately, if you think about buy low, sell high, isn't this the week where you're basically buying as low on the Niners as you probably could all season in this recent run and selling as high as you could on Detroit?
I think that's totally fair. I mean, it's been a month since they really played a really good game. So yeah, I do think like it's difficult to get on the 49ers to the outside. I do think they'll have success with Amon-Ra and Laporta, but you know, okay, Jared Goff's home road splits are really bad too. And I don't think that's just a narrative or noise. Like Jared Goff likes playing inside good weather. I haven't checked the weather yet for the San Francisco game, but yeah.
It's supposed to be pretty nice. It's getting nicer now. It's not like the rain that it was last week. Any other like props or things to look at in that last game that you know, our listeners could benefit from this time we've subjected them to?
I think the usage stuff, which often gets lost in the wash in these games that people may not realize in these two, is the way that Andrews and Likely are going to interact in this game is going to be huge. And also how much Odell Beckham plays is going to be huge for props. And I know people think that projections are just like some bot or some algorithm that spits all this stuff out. All of us spend so much time trying to figure out, hey, how much is Andrews going to be on the field? How much is Likely going to be on the field? And how should we project this? And to me, like, yeah, there's some science behind that, but there is a lot of art and it's very difficult. So people who think they can understand how much Mark Andrews is going to play, I think that's a huge edge. Odell Beckham only ran 8 routes last week. Nelson Aguilar ran 18. Market had that flipped before the game. I thought Beckham would be ahead significantly of Aguilar. Didn't happen like that. So I just encourage people to think through these kind of spots where it's not static, because if it's static, the line is probably going to be pretty good. It's not going to be static on Andrews versus Likely. We're all going to be kind of guessing. So yeah, I think those are two spots to watch in that game.
That's interesting. It's more difficult, but you have more differences of opinion. So what's the advantage there? Like what gives you and your team an edge, you think, over other people that are looking at this and trying to forecast the same thing?
I just think that this is our 24/7 job to find out everything we can about how much players are going to play and how players are going to be used. We don't really think about too much who's going to win the game and stuff like that. So this is all we do. We try to find as many quotes, as talk to as many reporters as we can, follow everything as close as possible to make the best guess that we can. But again, it's not a scientific output. It is way more art. And I think that's fun, honestly. Like, I get bored by just, hey, hit Rufus's model, tell me what to bet. I mean, you know, and I know there's way more that goes into it behind the scenes, but I find the art stuff super, super interesting.
I actually agree, and that's why I kind of like the Super Bowl every year and betting the props for it.
Okay, so real quickly, this episode's sponsored by Splash Sports. We have this one and done. Rufus wants to talk about his poor one and done last week, which was
Sam Burns. What's I that? Took Sam Burns. Well, right, but it was
a poor outcome,
and I had an outright on him
staring first in the plate.
And then he went. He hit it in the water each of the last two holes, and I think finished like sixth or something. So he only got like 300,000, and so suddenly it's,
Adam and I both had JT.
Here's a question: what if somebody picked Nick Dunlap beforehand if he was eligible? He actually won $0 in prize money.
They're an idiot if they did.
Yeah, that'd be really funny.
I don't know if you've talked about this on here before, Rufus. You can ignore if so, but how are you coming to your picks for one and done?
So generally I'm doing it approximately 5 minutes before the tournament starts. And I'm like, oh, I need to pick somebody. So I liked Burns outright. And I kind of figured, like, you know, I didn't want to, I mean, this is not a very big prize pool event. It's not an elevated purse event. So it's like, and I kind of figured Burns isn't going to, using him here is not going to be that detrimental because I don't see him being much, like I made him like 34-1. I don't see him being higher than 34-1 ever in an elevated field, really. I mean, mm-hmm. that could change for sure. But I mean, the interesting thing, like Scheffler being going off, like I made Scheffler, like I had a little, almost some outright value there, like plus 550. Like yes, it's a lower purse event, but at the same time, like, when is he going to be plus 550? Probably,
I mean,
not.
John Rahm played like the Mexico Open that one year, and there's always like someone really good at Corrales, you know. I think if you like with all this stuff, like the best ball and the one and done, understanding players' schedules is the huge thing. Because if you get a guy who goes and plays the Mexico Open and he's good, then you're gonna want to save him for that. But it's really hard to know what events these guys are gonna play.
You really don't. And just because even if they've committed, a lot of times they, you know, they withdraw and I mean, I learned a lot from Michael Kim's Twitter, but like you confirm by like Friday. And so, I mean, the schedules are just so, they change so much, I'm sure. And we really have no idea, but I guess you can go off historical patterns, but I think it's so different this year with the elevated events now. But you know, what's funny, Adam, is I took your boy, Eric Cole, and the first event of the year, maybe first or second, I think it was at the Sony Open, just because I was like, I don't think he's ever going to be this high again.
And now he is.
It's a great course fit for him. Yeah. And for the first time in my life, I have a bet on him to win this week.
You see,
it doesn't profile as a great course for him.
This is where the edge is in beating Rufus. Everybody has to say, oh, how can I beat Rufus and all the sim bros? It's identifying what is not in the model. And what was not in Rufus's model, Farrah Cole, was heart and guts and gumption and grit and wanting to really play the course. And that's why he was lagging so far behind on Eric Cole in the model. I've cracked the
code.
It's amazing when a guy like gets that kind of grit, when he finds that grit at age 35. It's rare. Most people with grit, you know, also have it like at age 30 or maybe 27. But for someone to like get that grit so late in life, you know, it's quite impressive.
Yeah.
All right. Adam, thank you so much for joining us. Good luck this week. And we'll talk to you again soon.
You too. Appreciate it, guys.
So that was our interview with Adam Levitan, who's founder of Establish the Run, which is a DFS service. Rufus, any departing or final thoughts on the NFL games?
Not really. You know,
I mean, I think
I won't be switching my channel. I won't be having to switch my TV between football and golf like I did last week, because the golf tournament starts tomorrow, Jeff. So make sure to get your entry in for the Slash Sports Pool.
Ooh, good pro tip. Tonight. I'm going to do it today. Yeah. So question, Rufus, I know, you know, Massey Peabody is not like updated yet, but I looked enough and I have fair confidence that it's going to show betting value on both favorites. Why do you think that is happening? Betting value is like significant value on both. That if
I think it will, I don't think necessarily San Francisco, but I think on the Ravens, yes.
Okay. I think it'll show value on both, but
well, I mean, look, okay. I make the San Francisco line minus 10 going, like if this were last week, I think Detroit played a better game relative to their expectation than San Francisco did.
But you think it's going to change the full 3 points? It's going to change like a point at the most.
No, but right. But at the same time, like, I don't think that's, if my line's within 2 points, I wouldn't call that betting value, especially if they're dead numbers.
Okay.
But why do I like Baltimore?
Well, why do you think you like both is the question.
I mean, there's Mahomes in the playoffs and all those narratives and how well Kansas City seems to play well in these big games they have. And when you have a quarterback like Mahomes, it's kind of a cheat code. And Lamar Jackson has struggled in the playoffs in the past. But I mean, I think Baltimore's healthier than, I think they're a healthier team. I think they're a better team top to bottom. If Lamar plays his sort of, like, if you think about both quarterbacks play, like, on a distribution, if you get like a 50th percentile Lamar game against 50th percentile Mahomes game, I think the line should be much higher. But if you think that playoff Mahomes is going to be like, you know, 85th percentile for his distribution, and Lamar is going to, you know, in the playoffs is going to be like 35th percentile for his distribution, then certainly that changes things. And then you sort of say, okay, well, then Kansas City's the right side. So I think that's kind of a way of thinking about it.
Yeah.
And maybe the market thinks that Mahomes is going to play better on his distribution in the playoffs than Lamar will.
Yeah. I mean, it's interesting because when the lines popped, I'm inclined to bet underdogs and think underdogs. And then I looked at your numbers and I was like, man, it does make sense that Baltimore would be the right side. Baltimore and San Francisco would be the right side from an analytics perspective, because you have like the narrative of Mahomes outplaying, you know, they've largely been a pretty, you know, they've been a good team, obviously, but their offense has struggled at many times this season, whereas Baltimore has been a pretty dominant team all season. You know, likewise, we know that your system at least has a little bit undervalued or kind of had Detroit lower all season. And obviously of the Niners is one of the best teams, like right behind Baltimore. So are you gonna play some like derivatives or props or anything? Did you end up playing anything last week
props
in those games?
Sorry. I had some props and some second half stuff. I did not win. No.
Got it.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
We had quite a bad college basketball weekend, but we'd had such a good week that it was still a good week before that. But
yeah.
Did we want to talk at all about anything basketball related or
your internal emotional struggle? No, we did a lot. Let's talk about that next week, because I do think it's a fascinating thing to talk through. This will be like a great looking at Rufus introspectively and what motivates Rufus. So for those of you guys that like the Rufus Plus EV episodes, this is going to be a life EV episode a little bit next week. We're going to have Kevin Clark on, but we'll also do a little deep dive into Rufus's psyche, because it's obviously the bye week, which is a good time to do a Rufus psyche episode. So we'll just tease that for next week. And we'll talk to you guys all again next week. Crunching all the numbers in a simulated system that break down the data, analytically driven. Media coverage of sports gambling is pathetic. The bottom line is watered down. It seems like they don't get it. As I mentioned, this episode was brought to you by Splash Sports. You must be 21 years of age or older in Massachusetts, Iowa, Arizona, and Louisiana, 19 years of age or older in Alabama, or 18 years of age or older in other states to enter into a paid fantasy contest. Sam Hunt, reppin' Rutgers, Jeff Ma, Rufus Peabody, crunching all the numbers, Massey Peabody rankings, we're looking for the edge, analytically driven, crunching all the numbers.